Mixed emotions, to be sure. A 5-0 shutout victory, Flames over the Oilers on Saturday. Darren Haynes joins us on the phone line. Haynesy, I was split into two camps. I was a man divided on Saturday. That victory cements the Flames finishing above the Oilers in the standings, which we've come accustomed to. Not good for the lottery odds. And yet, at the same time, there is something but a good old Alberta beatdown of the provincial capital that's quite enjoyable. How was your Saturday night?
Yeah, what a weak effort that was from Edmonton. It really was. I guess they're used to it. I honestly thought that they would rise up, and I really thought they would be a more inspired team given the circumstances. Big Saturday night, a chance to kind of close on a winning note against a team they haven't beat very often recently, after always beating Calgary throughout the 80s in that building. But no, other than that little spurt by the Oilers early, that was uninspiring. And Todd McLellan, that was a great clip, and all of it was, you could totally relate to him for just losing his you-know-what after the game.
Yeah, did he ever. There's 2 minutes of essentially calling out and questioning the character of his group, talking about a lack of effort, talking about all these things they've tried to rid this group of, they've been working to fix. The Flames playing the fourth time in 6 days, being better in every measurable facet of the game. He was pissed and basically said, oh, they got a PA day off tomorrow. They took one today. That's back-to-back days. Good for them. So clearly an unhappy coach, and a guy that while they missed the playoffs last year in San Jose, I don't think he's ever coached in a situation like this before. Something is toxic there.
It is, yeah. And I mean, for me, it's up and down the lineup, but the play that told me that this is how this game is going to go and it shouldn't be a surprise is that Jordan Eberle play on Backlund's first shorthanded goal. Oof. What an uninspired, lazy, like, Backlund just kind of blows past him. He doesn't look remotely interested in catching up with him, getting a stick in him, and then he kind of turns up ice just as the puck's going to the net. Like, honestly, that's the kind of play that guys on the bench get pissed off about when it happens at beer league hockey, never mind in the NHL. So, I mean, there's got to be some people in that dressing room that can't be happy as they look across the room at different players and how they're underperforming. And yeah, I don't know. We'll see what happens up north this summer. I mean, it's same old, right? But what a mess.
Well, and the funny thing is that they should be better. You know, every year we gather and talk with buddies and sit in this studio and people write prediction columns and everyone says, this is the year the Oilers are going to be better. You know, they finally made headway. This is the coach that's going to do it. This is the GM that's going to do it. Oh, we finally got rid of that guy that had no business having that job in that position. This is the year it's going to change. Is there a resume better than Bob Nicholson's? Is there a GM that's worked there that's had the success that Peter Chiarelli's had in the last decade? No. Is there a coach that's been as good as the one they have now? I don't think so. And yet they're still a disaster. It's a train wreck.
And it's at this point where the previous regimes and the list of coaches that have kind of come through there, I think they're starting to get a little bit more of a pass with every losing season that continues to happen. And you start looking, and it's really got to look at the personnel. So there's got to be significant changes, because I can't believe that Peter Chiarelli will be content with just kind of rolling that same group back out again in September.
Who's untouchable?
In Edmonton, 97.
Yep.
Do you go beyond that?
I'd keep the German around, because I think what he's shown has been very, very good as a young man in a small sample size, and that I don't know that if it's a toxic environment, I don't know if he's infected yet, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah, no, the young guys and like a Klefbom, and like I think there's pieces there, but certainly you look at the guys that are have 3, 4, 5 years on the resume now, and they may be good players. There's some good players in there, but maybe they need to be changed for different good players.
Better team players would be an assumption that I think a lot of people have arrived at. It doesn't reek of a group that has strong leadership, and the star players that I think many had hoped would be their captains haven't been given C's yet. I think there's probably good reason for that.
Yep. So we'll see if the, you know, like a light switch, they could just turn it on in the new building. But after 10 straight years on the outside of the playoffs, you really start to wonder how, what kind of a turnaround, what's it going to take to actually get that team, you know, heading the right direction. And I look forward to the day when they do, because honestly, the Battle of Alberta is pathetic right now. It really is. I had to laugh when they asked Joel Coburn at the intermission, you know, what one of his favorite memories of the Battle of Alberta is. And he picked out a memory that happened 4 years before he was born.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what it's come to. There is no Battle of Alberta for really any hockey fan under the age of 35. They have no recollection of how great that rivalry once was. And it's really sad.
You nailed it right there, because players talk about it like it matters. It's more spirited between fans than it is between these clubs. The Battle of Alberta is alive amongst the fan bases. These teams, it may as well be Minnesota or Washington or Florida or Carolina. There's nothing that screams, I don't like you. And what it used to be is one of the greatest rivalry in sports, because they absolutely hated each other.
Well, they both made the playoffs once in 25 years, the same year. Like, and it's, so never mind playing each other. They can't even both get into the playoffs at the same time. And that's what the rivalry needs. That's what will get it going again, is they need to meet in the playoffs. One of my favorite stats of all time is the fact that Yoni Ordeo, and this is why it's great that he had the shutout in that final game on Saturday. He was born on the day of the last Flames Oilers playoff game. Huh. So that puts it in perspective how long it's been.
That's a good little dig there. That's a Hainsey stat special. Where'd you find that one? That's awesome.
You know what? My mind works in mysterious ways.
Any takeaways from the Flames? I don't know how much to value this garbage time, so to speak, and yet I've been very impressed with a lot of guys who major question marks were sort of hanging around for me on this roster.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you see they're having it's kind of interesting on how they are where they are and how they got to where they are. And it really puts the microscope on the goaltending and the uncertainty and the poor start, because there are a lot of players having great seasons now that we get to the end of the year. And you look at it between the career years for points wise for Giordano and Monahan and Gaudreau gets his 30th on Saturday and Hamilton's had a good year and Colburn and you know, that whole career year thing that so many had last year, there's a bunch of them doing it again this year, just with not nearly the same team results. So they're, it makes you wonder what it was that really cost this team a chance to be in a race right now, which the way they're playing and the way some of those individuals have performed, they really should be in a race. And it really points to the bad special teams, I guess. It's that bad October. But, they're playing well. There's individuals playing well. The young guys are providing a shot of energy. And that, I think, is maybe something that was missed. There wasn't that same kind of youthful injection this year. The only real rookie the longest time was Sam Bennett. And he was not, you know, one of those guys that was at risk of not making the team and just happy to be here. We knew he was going to be on the team all along. So maybe that's a difference, is they haven't had that same kind of freshness in the dressing room that they've had lately. But yeah, you know, I like what I see. I like what I've seen from Jyrki Okipaka, for example, someone that has really impressed me since coming over in the Chris Russell trade. So there's certainly reasons to be positive the way the season is ending in an otherwise negative result, because they're not making the playoffs.
It's weird. It's almost been a lack of clamoring for Russell and Weidman, despite how beloved those two have been at different times over their careers in Calgary. Weidman done with injury and Russell traded to Dallas, but when Yoni's been in net, this hasn't been a club that's been really leaky on the back end. I think it was leakier when they had those vets back there.
Yeah, no, you're saying what everybody's thinking. You know, it's the fall off, if there's been fall off at all, from going from those veterans to the young guys, has not been very big. You know, it's been pretty slim, and that's just, you look at the model and how this team is, and this is the problem for next year, is they still have these big contracts. They still have the Wyman contract. They still have the Smead contract. They still have the Stajan contract. There's some big contracts in bottom six forwards, in bottom pair of defensemen, and they're going to need to get beyond that before this team really kind of has a chance to turn upwards and become a bit of a perennial threat, if you will.
Yeah, it's funny. People say, oh, they got too much money on the blue line. It's like, well, Gio deserves to get paid. He's not hurting you at his number. TJ Brody's a steal at his number. Dougie Hamilton's probably the going rate for an elite 21, 22-year-old defenseman. That's not limiting them from doing anything. It's the guys that are spending time eating popcorn when they're making $3 to $5 million or $2.9 to $3.5 million. That's what limits you. Mason Raymond at 3.1 in the minors. That limits you. Are trying to save $200,000 on Lance Boma only to turn around and have to pay him $6 million the next offseason over the course of 3 years. That's what hurts you. It is the bad money that's crippling them, and this offseason is a pinch point.
Yeah, and it's the evolution that's happened in the league. When Matt Stajan signed that contract, it wasn't as absurd as it looks like now. Because back then, it seemed like the payroll model for a team was, you know, you kind of pay your top-line guy $6 million. You know, you kind of staggered it. It was a lot closer to the same money from top-line to fourth-line. But now everyone's kind of jumped on you look at the teams that have success. You look at the Stanley Cup teams and how are they built. And you look at Chicago. They got their stars, and they pay their stars well, and they're really good stars. And then they just keep surrounding them with affordable talent that they need to change out as soon as they become affordable, and they bring in new talent. It's almost like Chicago Blackhawks is a team that looks good on your resume. So if you're a young player, hey, you know what? Let's go to Chicago. I'll play there for a couple of years, and then they'll move me and I can get big money somewhere else. It's that kind of thing. So that model is what Calgary's trying to catch up on, but too late because they've already got all this money kind of socked away in unproductive places. So it's going to take time, and it's going to take probably another year unless they do a bevy of buyouts this summer, which I really don't see happening.
Sounded like there was some interest around Dennis Wiedemann around the time of him mauling a linesman or whatever happened there. I can't recall. It was ages ago. Would you think there's an appetite for him in an expiring year of his contract, given that I know the contract looked to be a burden if you were going to pick it up with 3 years left, but now it's just 1 year. Cap's going up to 74 schmil.
Yeah, it's certainly more feasible than a year ago. Less feasible than that trade happening at the trade deadline, but potentially they can maybe make it happen this summer. Certainly you're looking at eating, I'd say, the full 50% that they're allowed. But certainly if you can, and then that's why buying out Dennis Wiedemann doesn't make that much sense. If they can instead just retain money, not have to pay anything next year, and just trade his rights. So I'm sure they'll take a look and see if there are a chance to do that, because clearly from what we've seen from Weatherspoon, from Joakim Pekka, from Brett Kulak, there's players that can play well enough in a third pairing role that they do not need Dennis Wiedemann next year.
I'm with you. And I don't know what your pairs are going to look like on the top two, because they have split up Gio and Brody a bit lately. You know Dougie Hamilton's your third best defenseman. Is Joakim Pekka a second pairing guy? Is he a third? You've got England and Schmid still on the books for another year. And I have a mind in a clottle. Is he a guy that you would give a contract to? He's a U. If he's interested in hanging around, would you sign him?
I think so, but I think for him, and maybe for the team as well, I think that kind of hinges on whether they're able to get out from a couple of, at least one and maybe two of those other deals. Because otherwise, you don't want to, I mean, if your choice is McLeod or Weatherspoon, I think you go with the younger guy. But if it looks like you could use both of them, then I like what you've gotten from McLeod. Yeah, he's an older guy, but it's not older guys that's the concern. It's expensive guys that are the concern, and he has no reason. He doesn't have enough NHL resume to command much money. So yeah, he's an unrestricted free agent, but is he going to cost you? He's going to be probably one of those guys that signs for a little over a mil just because that's all he can get. So definitely if they have the space, I think he would be a guy to consider for sure.
The draft lottery, there's three games left for the Calgary Flames. They host LA on Tuesday. They've got Vancouver Thursday and Minnesota in the finale on the weekend. Is there any way they could leave all 6 points on the table? I mean, I think you have to start Yoni Tuesday, but could you please start the old guys the last two?
Yeah, I think it's possible. I think LA is going to be a tough game, so that one should come pretty naturally. Although they always play well against the Kings, we saw that again last week. So you never know. Vancouver, it's almost you want to be more. The teams that could surprise and beat Calgary are the teams that maybe you don't expect. Because Vancouver, who knows what to expect, right? They lose 9 in a row, then they go win back to back on consecutive nights in California. So that team makes no sense at all. So could Vancouver come in here and win on Thursday? Absolutely. Now they're on a little bit of a winning string. So that could happen. And the game in Minnesota, where the trap there might be for Calgary, Minnesota looks like they're going to be in no man's land, really locked up, ready to enter the playoffs. And we saw the kind of personnel that Calgary put out for game 82 last year when they had a playoff spot locked up, and it wasn't very good. So that could work against those kind of draft enthusiasts who are hoping for a Calgary loss on that final Saturday. It might be definitely the B version of the Minnesota Wild. Darcy Kemper is still a good goalie, so you never know, but I doubt Calgary's going to go 0 points or six, and the more this thing plays out, it feels like they're going to be in that kind of sixth hole again come draft time.
I think we should go Soviet styles. Three goalies, three games, everyone gets one. Yoni Tuesday, Hiller Thursday, Backstrom weekend. And Hiller's been good against Vancouver this year, old guy against his old team in the finale. Come on! Is Bob listening? He needs to write this down.
Yeah, maybe a call from the management office, a little tap on the shoulder. Hey, let's give them all one more try. You never know. I wouldn't rule it out because I thought we were done with Jonas Hiller a couple times already this season, and he still seems to find his way into the starter's net. So we'll see. But I don't know. It's going to be an interesting week because the results keep surprising me. Columbus picked up a big win yesterday. I didn't see that, or on Saturday. And the Jets beating a motivated Minnesota Wild team, and so really all bets are off on these teams other than in that Edmonton Vancouver back-to-back will be fun, won't it?
Yes, overtime, please, both nights. These fans deserve more of these two incredible hockey teams. Play from some free hockey for them.
Yeah, I mean, Calgary can't catch, and by catch, that's looking the opposite direction,
of course,
Edmonton.
Yes.
So they almost need, the more so they're looking for Edmonton to kind of continue this path that they're on to the bottom of the cellar, and Vancouver sweep there would help Calgary, because probably that moves the Canucks ahead of Calgary by the time the season's over.
Yeah, Vancouver's played one fewer game than Calgary, and they're 1 point back. Columbus is 2 points. Winnipeg is tied with them. Both have three games remaining, but Winnipeg's got to go through California. That's never easy. Toronto's got four left. They've been kind of 500-ish the last month or so. You've got a piece up on the website. You're sort of begrudgingly accepting they're likely to pick sixth?
Yeah, the way it plays out, I think Vancouver will finish ahead of them. So I think they're probably going to end up kind of fifth from the bottom. And then I was really just looking at the odds. And the way the draft lottery odds are, if you finish fifth from the bottom, your most likely percentage is to pick sixth, because there's probably going to be a couple teams that end up being pulled out of the old bingo ball machine that move up and pass you. Or sorry, one team will pass you and a couple. Yeah, so that's kind of how it works roughly. But I find it fascinating, and I don't mind it at all, the three lottery format. And it's going to be really fascinating watching when that comes up on April 30th, because really at this point, Calgary could finish as low as, be picking this June, they could be picking as low as probably eighth, but they could be a top three pick, kind of a 1 in 4 chance of that too. So it's all over the map, and it's going to be soon time to start looking at those prospects and beyond the top three, and who are the others that could kind of fall into range. And that's kind of my, I guess, next thing to focus on once the season wraps up.
Yeah, we got lots of time till the draft, and it's interesting. There's not a lot of consensus once you get outside of the top three in terms of, I've seen a lot of different guys at four, a lot of different guys 5 through 8, but good players and players that, a lot of scouts out there like. So we'll see what they're faced with. Now, a reminder, April 30th, this is going to be a extravaganza. Sportsnet will carry your draft lottery. I expect the biggest audiences of the season, maybe more even than the Stanley Cup, Darren, because all Canadian teams have a chance to get Auston Matthews on Rogers.
Yeah.
You'll be tuned in, right?
Yeah, this is the Canadian. It's crazy. Honestly, with six teams all competing for the bottom right now, five Canadian teams plus Columbus. Like, what a sad year for hockey in Canada.
You want to do a little draft lottery simulator with me, or do you need to run? Because I can do this on my own, but I coming on the heels of your article, it would be topical just to run ourselves through the exercise once.
Yep, happy to tune in.
All right, we've got the draft lottery simulator up at futureconsiderations.ca. Our good pals there have, not the real draft lottery, but something that has the exact same odds. We're going to run it with today's odds in the standings. Going in, Edmonton, 20% chance, Toronto, 13.5%. Columbus 11.5, Vancouver 9.5, Winnipeg 8.5, Calgary 7.5, fifth greatest chance of winning it. Let's run the lottery. Oh, Edmonton, another forward for the Oilers. Next year they'll be better. Picking second, Buffalo. Interesting, that's off the board for Buffalo. They were actually sitting sixth. That's a big jump for them. They'll get a Finnish winger likely. And Toronto, who had the second best odds, will pick third. Let's run the mock. Auston Matthews to the Oilers, Patrick Laine to the Sabres, Jesse Puljujärvi to Toronto. After that, Chychrun to Columbus, Tkachuk to Vancouver, Pierre-Luc Dubois to Winnipeg, and Alex Nylander to the Calgary Flames. Interestingly, born in Calgary, son of playoff ghost Michael Nylander. Always great regular seasons, and then disappeared entirely in the second season. His son.
Oh, yeah, he was talented, but a little bit enigmatic as well.
The old Nylander Houdini act in the playoffs. It was a familiar sight in the mid-90s. Thank you, Darren.
All right. Have a good one.
Appreciate that. That is Darren Haynes, slingsfrom80feet.ca.